The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Dana Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go.
Welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat podcast, presented by our great friends down at 50 West Brewing Company, making delicious beers for you to drink and get buzzed on. This is a great time. Paul Dana Jr., by the way, Fletcher Page, your Inquirer Bengals beat writers, as we talk about the coaching search, which is, oh man, we're going in today. We're going in on the coaching search today. This coaching searches and like coming up with the future of a franchise, what it should look like and all that, is the type of thing you just need to crack open a coast to coast with your buddies and just start throwing ideas around. I feel like that's what we would do if it wasn't so early in the morning right now. And I'm considering it. It is Monday.
I think we're going to get it all out there, though. And then the Bengals are going to make their decision an hour after we finish this podcast.
Oh, inevitably. Isn't it? I feel like they know our recording time and like to. I don't think so, though. We got so much to get to. So let's try to stay organized and stay on point here for the people. Because this is an important one. I feel like the people are counting us more than ever. They need us. They want us.
We're here for stability during these transitional periods.
Yeah. And insider info. We're here to tell you the things that you don't know and tell you the things that you think you know that are wrong. You didn't know them, but we knew them. But others did also know things that we knew, but you didn't know.
This is my favorite hour of the week.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start by going through the candidates, the sort of reviewing the week in the search and previewing the next week in the search, and where it's at. Things are, by the way, just now getting very interesting as the Bengals start to go outside of Paul Brown Stadium after staying inside of last week. So we're going to kind of get into all of those guys, what we're hearing, pros and cons, what direction there appears to be lean, some of the actual method that the Bengals are using and going after this. We'll talk a little Marvin and some things, some discussion of his future and what's going on there. We'll talk a little bit about the AFC North, which is every single place is you could have a reality show in right now. And they'd each be on. That'd be a good thing. Here's what we'll do. Later in the pod, we will pick a reality show that each franchise in the AFC North would be. So what would it be? Wow. If we had to pick one and what channel it would be on. and we'll get to that. We'll talk about the AFC North a little bit. So what we learned from this weekend is the wild card games wrapped up. And of course, we would be remiss not to end with today and Kanye and find out what is going on there. All right. Are you ready, Fletcher Page?
I'm on it.
Let's get into it. So candidates. Here's overview of where the search is at right now. So through the first week, most things focused on in-house on the early portion. Now, I mean, the Bengals not holding back in interviewing. I mean, they're going way beyond you know, a small quick search. I think they're kind of looking for everybody, you know. And but it started where you would think it would start. It started with Darren Simmons, special teams coordinator. Started with Bill Lazor, offensive coordinator. Started with Hugh Jackson, special assistant to the head coach, national laughingstock, all of those things. And then Vance Joseph came in and spent a day and a half in Cincinnati talking with the team, of course, fired by the Broncos, but has a history here, knows the organization. That's kind of your core four, really, where you start. If it's going to be in-house, you would think it would come from there. What were your initial impressions of the core four? I think as expected, I mean, basically.
Yeah, nothing surprising. You know, I think that Bill and Darren, both those guys deserved an interview. And then the Hugh Jackson thing, I know that riles people up, obviously, on Twitter, rightfully so. But again, you've got a guy on staff with head coaching experience and also previous success as an offensive coordinator with the franchise. So I thought the Hugh Jackson interview was fine. Didn't rattle me.
Yeah.
That rattles some people.
One thing I do want to say as sort of a disclaimer, when people get up in their feelings
right about
this search, there's nothing wrong with interviewing anybody, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can't.
They're just trying to talk to as many people as they can. And it's crazy not to talk to anybody in house that you have, you owe it to them for time put in and whatever. And Hugh, whatever he is, has been a head coach. He's right here. He understands your area. There's nothing wrong with talking to him. Now, how serious this is, we will get into that. The Hugh factor is obviously a big one. So I don't have any problem with that. I will say of those four, I get the impression that they are giving a fair shot to Bill and to Darren, but I think obviously Hugh and Vance of the, if you want to call them internal candidates, I don't know, Vance technically not internal, but of those, I mean, I think those two with their head coaching experience and everything else probably I would think have a leg up as far as if they're going to go familiar, if they're going to go people they know, you would think it would come from one of those two.
Yeah. And I think that Vance would be, it seems to be in a better position. I love to interact with people on Twitter. I love when people tweet at me, but I have really tried to refrain from reading comments on things about Hugh, because it doesn't take a long scroll to get kind of a negative vibe off that. So
yeah,
we'll have to see how serious that gets.
Yeah, and I want to go through some of who the other candidates are before we dive into serious that is going to get. So, so they then turn outward. So this weekend. So I want to also go over. People were, well, who's doing these interviews? How are they doing? Well, the team doing the interviews. You have Mike, obviously. You have Katie Blackburn, Troy Blackburn. You have Paul Brown, and then you have Duke. That's your team. That's your hiring committee. Those are the five in all the rooms that they're going into, and that's who it is. That's the family of ownership. You know, people that listen to the BBP obviously know Duke very well. We had him on our live BBP at 50 West last year after the draft. We've talked about him a lot and the influence he has inside of the organization. His presence in a room where everyone else is a Brown, I think, is telling about how they view him, about his role in the organization. We've been telling you this for a long time. A long time, since this thing was called Scribe Session 5 years ago, okay? I've been telling you that Duke Tobin is de facto GM, and people never want to, hire a GM! The first thing you need to do is hire a GM. They have a GM. They don't call him a GM because of the structure within. Duke Tobin is a GM, and that's why. If you don't believe me, he's the only non-Brown inside of the hiring room, okay? So that should tell you what you need to know about Duke Tobin's role, and that should, I think, make people feel pretty good about, you know, this not becoming some family decision, or everyone that yells about Mike Brown. I will say this, as they go outside to outside candidates, I do believe that Mike has, for a long time now, taken himself out of the vast majority of the operations. You know, we've been saying this forever. You know, Troy and Katie and their team there do the vast majority of the day-to-day of all the operations. Mike is doing 2 to 3 to 4 decisions a year, maybe. And that's part of the group. It's not like he's out there with his wand. You do this and you do that. He's kicking back. He understands that he is not the future of the organization, that this is Katie's turn. This is the time for the next generation. And I think that's part of this is Marvin was sort of his last thing, right? I mean, that was sort of the last thing that was Mike's tenure. He 5, 6, 7 years ago pushed most of the things on to everybody else. And without Marvin there, Mike obviously a part of it. Obviously the family's going to be the ones making this call. But I do believe that this is much more about the next generation, which is Katie and Troy and Duke and Paul.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of tired of hearing about the past. Like, people keep bringing up the, you know, the playoff drought or just however many years or decades of animosity or angst or whatever for the way that maybe decisions have been made or the way that head coaching searches were handled in the past. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. Even the 7 playoff losses for Marvin, none of that stuff matters as it relates to tomorrow or next season or moving forward for the next coach.
Yes, I would agree. It matters to fans.
Right.
But as far as logistically and the difference, you know, it's a cloud that hangs over the organization that I think it has to be a factor, but I don't think it's something that they haven't already accounted for. I mean, they in trying to pull this off, I mean, pulling the plug on Marvin now, I think is part of shows that they are kind of.
Well, yeah, firing Terrell, you know.
Right. There's been a different urgency the last few years in among the coaching staff. And, you know, so between Zampezi and Terrell and now Marvin and their willingness to go outside of their comfort zone, which is what they're doing.
And we're going to get into this later, too, I believe. It's been interesting for me to watch the national voices mm-hmm. come in and sort of weigh in on this situation with either information that I feel is a little bit outdated or I just disagree with.
So, yeah.
And we'll crack into what the perception is from the outside.
I mean, there's a lot. This is what happens. Nationals, many are plugged in, and there are some more so than others, but a lot of them base things that they write off of sort of generalizations that exist across the league that aren't necessarily true. And that's, I think that's why a lot of people come to us. I think that's why a lot of people listen to Pete and the quality local journalists that are here is I think that those have a better understanding of the structure now. It's like, you know, people that just yell Mike Brown doesn't care is cheap and Mike this, that, don't really understand, I think, the real way the organization currently runs. And it's like it being reported that, oh, the kids are more involved now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a 6-year-old storyline to those that really know the team. I mean, that they've basically been running this team for a long time. So we'll get to some of that stuff. So this weekend, the committee flies out to L.A. They sit down with Zach Taylor, who is the QB's coach for the Rams, and Shane Waldron, who's sort of a passing game coordinator, glorified quality control almost.
Just handing out titles for raises these days.
Yeah. So you've got those two guys in L.A., both inexperienced as all get out. But you get into this group of coaches who everybody wants the next McVay. Everybody wants the next McVay. And you want Kyle Shanahan and these guys. Yeah, well, so they just go to their tree, right, and find these guys.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they went to Kansas City and talked to Eric Bieniemy, who's the latest where everybody wants Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson.
So want that Andy Reid
tree. Go to the Andy Reid tree, right? Which the Andy Reid
tree.
The Andy Reid tree is flowering across the playoffs this year.
Talk about a reality show. I would watch the Andy Reid tree.
So talk to Eric Bieniemy, who's in his first year as an offensive coordinator there, but doesn't call plays. And so from there, then it's actually today, may even be here now, Todd Monken, Todd Monken of Tampa Bay, their offensive coordinator for the last 3 years, who has a really interesting background in that he's got a ton of college background. And so if you're looking for that new offense, the college to the NFL offense, he spent a bunch of time in the college game, Oklahoma State, Big 12 type stuff, then went and basically turned Southern Miss around, then got the OC job in Tampa and has done really well. Their offense, despite their team and their organization being kind of a dumpster fire, the one thing that has been good is their offense continues to produce. So that's where that was at. And now expectations are this, none of this is official yet, but expectations are that they are waiting for this weekend's games to get over to bring in a couple guys that were playing this weekend. The one that we've been banging the drum on for a long time here, Matt Eberflus.
Man, I'm glad you said his name before I did.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I mean, all you got to do is watch the Colts right this weekend and watch them all year, and the way he has turned them around, and the Bengals should be trying to replicate everything Indy right now, because that is the blueprint for what they want it to look like. And for him to come in and do what he's done, I fully expect that there will be a request and an interview made with him.
He's going to be a busy guy, I believe.
Maybe. I don't know. He hasn't been that busy yet. He's talked to the Browns. So I would expect that. Maybe Chris Richard in Dallas also could be part of that mix, but we'll wait and see on that. To me, Eberflus is the guy. I mean, that it makes the most sense to go outside of this building. If you can get him and package a guy like Zach Taylor to come be your OC or whoever Eberflus would have, let's go, right? That, to me, that's when you scream, because all the kids scream, let's go.
Take your shirt off.
That's where you take your shirt off, you say, let's go, and you go, you get the defensive head coach, a guy that has a culture change that he just was part of and has done so good in Indy, and you get the young offensive mind to come run the offense, and let's go.
That's 10 of 10. If that were to happen, that scenario.
That's what you want.
That's it.
That's what you want. Something like that, probably. And that's what, when we get into Zach Taylor and Shane Waldron to the same extent, I wonder how much of that is using the fact that you have the head coach position open and you can do interviews, you can have these conversations to talk to these guys about what would be an offensive coordinator position eventually.
Savvy.
Well, I mean, it's a thing that you'd want to do. That is a huge – Zach Taylor has done a lot of interviews, but I wonder how many of them really are – like, are you really going to promote a head coach who was under Tubbs as an OC doing poorly 2 years ago?
Well, when you put it like that.
To be head coach? He's a QB coach. Waldron? I mean, these guys are glorified quality control guys.
Yeah, I knew who Zach Taylor was just because I'd read a story about, I believe, he and his brother. But I had never heard of Waldron's name before this came up.
And not many have. And it's... He's just, I mean, look, congratulations that you are in the right place at the right time to be on that Rams staff, and everybody wants to be the Rams next, and everybody wants a piece of this new offensive wave. But, man, that's a huge jump that I would be severely uncomfortable with if I were really considering making a QB coach for the Rams who hasn't called a thing in the pros. To bring him in to run your organization, to run this organization, that is asking a whole lot. I am totally uncomfortable with that. I think that would be the worst thing that they could do.
Yep, I agree.
I wrote about that this week a little bit in BX about, look at, there is danger in the prototype. Okay, everybody wants this, the next Shanahan, McVay, Nagy, they want these guys who are these offensive wizards and gurus. Go back and look at 2016's hiring cycle when everybody was hiring all these offensive guys. 7 coaches were hired, in that hiring cycle, all on offensive backgrounds. Doug Peterson won the Super Bowl. Congratulations to him. He won the Super Bowl, and everybody's pointing to that. Guess what? Everybody else was fired, is gone. So you can talk about, yeah, of course, everybody wants to make the good hire that makes you look good, but there's a whole lot of rubble among all of those dudes. And, you know, be careful. And chase the right guy. Don't chase a prototype of, I need an young offensive guru. Not if they don't know how to lead, you know, and or you're going to end up like all of those teams that hired dudes that got fired.
Well, and to your point that you've been making for a month now, is the offensive guru pool has been so picked over that you've lost guys that have experience as offensive coordinator or maybe have a little bit more experience as an assistant coach. Now we're down to people that are 35 years old and are quarterback coaches, or Cliff Kingsbury, who just got fired as a college as a college head coach. So we've picked it down to this point to where your risk is much greater than some of these other guys. Like Nagy and Peterson were, you know, there wasn't a lot of risk with those guys.
They were coordinators for 2 and 3 years.
Right.
And that's why that's part of why they were successful. People talk about how young McVay was. Yeah, but he'd been a coordinator for 3 years. I mean, it wasn't like he was a QB's coach where there's all kinds of examples of, you know, these guys just going from nothing to the top because they understand high school and college offenses. That's crazy. And I don't have a problem with those guys getting the bump to becoming offensive coordinators. I'm sure they'll be highly sought over to do so if the Rams don't try to hold them back. But, you know, to think that being a head coach is about so much more. It's about culture. It's about leading people. It's about understanding how to get everybody to play for you. And in my BX this week, I pointed out, take a look back. Now, granted, the NFL's changing. We all know that. It's never changed more. But take a look back at the last 7 coaches to coach in the Super Bowl, okay? 5 of them have defensive backgrounds. So, and some of the ones that you most want. A guy like Pete Carroll, yeah, he was in college. He's a defensive guy. You know, go back. Everybody, outside of Peterson, who had the OC background, it's all defensive guys. I mean, and that's fine. I'm not saying that means you have to have a defensive guy, but let's not act like all offensive coaches are overrunning the lead. No, good coaches are the ones that are around at the end.
Right. Yeah. Let's not let the trend make you be so emotional that you reach.
Right. So this is where it stands right now. And I think expectations for how much longer this is going to go on are, you know, I would think this week they're gonna be done with, okay, we've talked to everybody that we want to talk to. Now, will they come back for a round of second interviews? Well, some of these guys can't talk after this weekend. I mean, it kind of closes off unless you're going to do a second interview right in that bye week of the Super Bowl. So, really, I think if it's the last chance to talk to people that you want to talk to this week. And I think after that, it's got to be decision time. And maybe it'll be decision time at the end of this week. So, let's handicap it.
Okay.
If where do you – give me your 3 most likely scenarios. Not what you would do.
Oh, no.
Not what I would do. Because it don't matter what we would do. I'll tell you what I would do. Or I have been telling you what I would do, obviously. But – what do you think they will do? Give me your top 3.
My top 3 candidates?
Yeah, who? What do you think they'll do?
Well, I do think I like Vance better than Hugh in terms of familiarity.
You think they like Vance better?
I do.
Than Hugh. Okay.
So I'll stick him in the 3. I like Eberflus as my number 1. Now, again, I'm thinking of what they're going to do. I like that. I like his experience.
See, this is another one of your hedge, your answers.
I am a hedge
you
guy.
Can never be definitive.
I
this
know,
is a
dude.
Problem with you.
I know.
You've got to put your foot in the sand and say, this is my ranking. I want 1. I'm going to stop explaining things. Number 1 thing that you think they're going to do is what? Who is it?
I think they're going to interview Eberflus.
Who will be their head coach? Quit hedging.
Yeah, but now also no. Hold on.
Answer.
We gotta litigate this.
Why can't you be definitive?
Because there's seven other head coaching jobs open out there.
What do you think will happen? So take those into consideration. You are doing it here. This is it. It's prediction time.
Because guys like Bieniemy, those guys are the rage right now.
Sure.
So maybe the Bengals decide on him, and he doesn't decide on them. I don't know.
Yeah, I think getting Bieniemy will be hard because I do think he will end up somewhere. I mean, he's done four interviews. I mean, he's turned down the Cardinals. So he's somebody that you like. I'm not as big of a fan of him in that he's only been an OC for a year. But, you know, he obviously, Andy Reid thinks very highly of him. And that means something. It's obviously proven to be successful when you look at the history of his former coaches. Whether you're talking about Harbaugh or Nagy or Peterson, any of these guys who are all across the league now, you know, that's something. But anyway, back to number one for you.
Matt Eberflus
is your – you think they're most likely for them to do. Okay, and two?
Vance Joseph,
three.
Offensive guy that might be a reach.
So you're thinking Zach Taylor.
I put Bieniemy there.
Okay, so Bieniemy. Okay. So you're going Eberflus, Vance, Bieniemy. All right, that's totally that's
and that's
totally
but fair. That's without me knowing what happens with these interviews this week. Who else they might bring in?
I say we still don't have the official request for Eberflus even in.
Mm-hmm.
He feels like a great fit, certainly, but I mean the guy hasn't even been requested or talked to,
right.
Or anything. Who knows? He could be a terrible interview for all we know. You know,
he could
I
go to the Browns.
Tend to really care.
Right.
I like to, you know, I'm like, it's like with the draft. I'm not, like the combine can help me get a view. It can validate what I already know. What I already know is what he did in Indy.
Right.
And dude, go back. I wish I could go back and play. Before the first week of the season, I talked with Greg Doyle, who's a columnist up in Indy. And he went off on how bad this defense is going to be because they had no talent.
They don't.
They were young. They were young everywhere and really didn't seem to have hardly any talent. And how they were going to be – they had to overcome what was going to be a truly atrocious defense. And they are arguably right now best defense left in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they certainly looked like it on whatever day they played, Saturday. They certainly looked like it on Saturday.
I grew up about an hour from Clemson, and I was hearing a lot about Deshaun Watson last week, and from a couple of my buddies.
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard from those buddies.
No,
they got Eberflus'd.
They got Eberflus'd, and he clearly has a feel. He clearly has a feel, and not only that, but be in the predicament that he was in, being hired by McDaniels and McDaniels, and then so having to get connected to a new head coach.
I think it was telling that they kept him through all that. They wanted to keep him.
And then
him.
For them him to do, and he saw from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Reich, I mean, he may be the one who was really responsible for the Doug Peterson Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, he's looked like a real genius in what he's done, not only offensively there, but offensively with Philadelphia in their run of the Super Bowl last year. He clearly has understanding of that. Eberflus saw all that firsthand.
But for my non-committalness,
yeah,
I felt like you put me in a position where I did have to say what I think that they were going to do instead of – or no, what I think they should do
yeah.
instead of what I think
they
will do.
They didn't do anything. I said number one, and then you had to fill in the blank.
But they haven't interviewed him yet, but I've still got him at one.
Yeah. I put Vance at one as far as what I think they'll do.
Okay.
And now it's obviously not what I would do. I think I've spent however many minutes of this podcast, hashtag Team Eberflus, stating my opinion, because I do think they need to go outside of their comfort zone. And I've talked before about how intriguing I find Vance Joseph as a head coach. You know, I just think that we have not. He has not gotten a fair shake. And people would say, what else do you need? But his quarterback situation was bad. I don't think he was ready to be a head coach when he was. You learn a lot from your first time through.
It wasn't like it was an all-out disaster either. I mean,
no, I mean, well,
it wasn't good.
It was our first back-to-back losing seasons, I believe, in like 60-some years or something like that.
Yeah, but it wasn't like they were like just embarrassing.
No.
Case Keenum at quarterback.
Hey,
and they won.
Case Keenum simultaneously, by the way, the reason Minnesota isn't good anymore and the reason Denver sucked. So I don't know if Case Keenum's good or bad.
I know that he'll be in the league for another 6 years.
Well,
either way.
Well, anybody that can. Yeah. A lot of guys will be in the league for another 6 years.
He's like
be okay.
He's like the next Fitzy.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm down
check
for
on, talk to Fitzy's accountant.
That's right.
About if it's all right being Fitzy. Life is good. Okay, so Vance at one. I'm curious to see how Todd Monken interviews here. His background, I think, is really interesting and I think speaks to what they're looking for. But he has the experience in a room.
So, different offensive mind, but with the experience.
Yeah, clearly understanding of what they need offensively and has been a leader. There was that Fitzy, speaking of, talking about how he sees him as a guy that has the it factor. Now, he could be speaking up for his coach or whatever, but there's something to that, and you've got to take into consideration what he was able to do under his watch on his side of the ball in Tampa, and that was have a really good offense. He really knew how to get the most out of DeSean Jackson, despite Jameis Winston not being super. And that speaks to maybe understanding how to get something out of John Ross, which could be the real game changer for this offense. If somebody can come in and understand how to properly use and get the most out of John Ross when you already have Green and Boyd and Mixon. You have something, right? I mean, that can be the true X factor. So I think he's very, very interesting. I have him in my top three. So Vance Eberflus. See, I think Hugh is very real, though. And so I have the fact that right now we don't know much about how they feel about Eberflus. I might have to put Hugh in my top three with Monken just because we don't know right now.
Right.
Not
we gotta
having
get
seen the official request, I'm having not gone through an interview yet. I do believe they will. I'm under the assumption he's been on their radar since well before he was actually even the man in Indy. So I think that he's going to be a very high up candidate. So, he's in the mix there.
We can update it.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is going to be changing as we go through. That's where I'm at with it. It's all happening. It's all in the mix. But with eight jobs open and everybody's talking to everybody, a lot happened there. One other thing I wanted to bring up on the Vance front,
yeah,
was the Gary Kubiak situation. Yeah. So Gary Kubiak, who's sort of like a consultant offensive, I don't know what his official title is there. He's some sort of offensive consultant in Denver. And Adam Schefter, ESPN, saying that Denver blocked the Bengals and the Falcons from interviewing Kubiak for offensive coordinator positions. So you're going to say, what? What does that mean? Why would they do that? Why, you know, what is going on there?
Well, I think the answer to that question is why would these teams be interviewing him? It would answer why Denver would be blocking, because depending on who you hire as a head coach, Kubiak could be quite a resource, either as an offensive coordinator for maybe or as a mentor for a younger guy that would sort of maybe cover up if you did hire somebody that didn't have a lot of experience. So,
Or as a head coach.
So well, I mean,
maybe they give it. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. I mean, I know he's had health stuff. Mm-hmm. But to me, that spoke as a couple of things. One, Vance saying, I'll bring Kubiak. You've got Vance as head coach,
okay.
Kubiak as OC, and whatever as defensive coordinator. That's like a mini. That's like a quiet let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, a muffled let's go.
It's not Eberflus and Taylor, young, exciting outsiders.
It's an
let's go,
undefined loud noise.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, you feel you can sell. You can sell that.
Oh yeah,
can sell that. But anyway, so I think that or it is okay. You're gonna hire a defensive guy. You want somebody who has been a coach, who's a strong offensive coordinator. Goes back to the Rams scenario when they hired Sean McVay. Well, the only problem was he was so young. So they brought in Wade Phillips on the defensive side of the ball, guy who'd been a head coach. He was a great defensive coordinator. Let's go! right? That's you know, so you get into that factor. So all of this makes an interesting look at maybe where they view a guy like Vance, I think.
And yeah, exactly. But Denver was like,
Yeah, not feeling that. Because I think Denver is totally in a situation, because they're hiring too,
right,
looking at the exact same situation. Right. We might need this guy. And you know, so we'll see what happens there.
Man, NFL consultant? What a versatile position for the future for those consultants.
Just hang out.
Yeah.
And you want to consult.
And then become wanted.
What did we say midseason when Hughes showed up? Is there anything worse than somebody with background at your position showing up at your business,
right,
your place of work as a consultant?
I'm just here to consult.
That dude is here to take your job.
Right.
Yeah. Consult, a.k.a. sit here, watch how things are going wrong,
right,
and tell the boss about how I could fix it.
And while you put your neck on the line every Sunday and potentially show your flaws, the consultant's just back there consulting and looking better and better and better.
Yeah.
Because he's not getting dinged.
He's just kicking back saying he did that wrong.
I would have done that.
I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, wouldn't have done that.
I definitely wouldn't have done that. No doubt. Man, consultants. I never want to see a podcast consultant show up here.
I was about to say that could be maybe 10 years, 15 years down the line.
Maybe I'll be a podcast consultant.
We could be consultants.
Ooh.
Making people nervous.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, so I guess I want to go into one more thing here, and that is it's the Hue factor, essentially, and it is what role perception will play with this hire, and because that's what scares people, right? It scares – It was fire Marv, hashtag fire Marv, hashtag not Hue. And it was, we don't want Hue. Or was it move over Marvy? What was it? Marvy must go.
Marvy must go. Hey, that tweet got a like.
It did get a like. But so the idea that, okay, Hue Jackson would immediately take any goodwill that you gained back by finally making the big move and take it away, and it won't help your bottom line, it won't help your season ticket holders, it won't help any of that stuff. How much does that matter to Mike Brown?
I think after seeing what he saw in December in that stadium, I think it has to matter. Now, I'm of the opinion that if you interview all these candidates and you do all the legwork and at the end of that process, you really believe that Hue Jackson is the person that gives you the best chance to win moving forward, that you should make that hire. And it shouldn't matter, because the outside noise shouldn't matter. But those empty seats is more than outside noise.
It is. It is. But you know what? I heard it this past off season, and I've heard it many times from them inside the building, and that is winning will bring them back. And if they look, if you go through all these candidates, because there is no it candidate. You know, when they hired Marvin Lewis, he was it. I mean, he was the hot shot candidate, and that, granted, that was 16 years ago, but he was the hot shot candidate, and he was the guy. That guy, I don't know that guy exists right now necessarily. I don't,
right.
You know, there's not a Shanahan, McVay, these guys. I mean, maybe Bieniemy, I guess. I mean, but come on. So
not a slam dunk.
No, there's no slam dunk. So if you go through these and you come back from all these outside interviews and say, I did not feel a slam dunk, the instant reaction is what? To turn back to people that you know. To turn, if there's no slam dunk outside, I want to go with somebody who has familiarity and I know what they're going to bring to the table. I know their work ethic. They know us. They know how to handle us. They know the personnel, all that stuff, and you can run with that. Rather than an outside influence, if you didn't feel comfortable with anybody outside.
Winning will bring them back. I don't want to – you can't make comparisons to, like, how quickly the bottom fell out on Marv last year. It's a totally different thing. I know that the stadium atmosphere was great for that Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
It was a 4-1 team. The stadium was in great shape when it was 4-1. Winning will bring them back. Nobody if they've hired Hugh and they go to the playoffs next year, I don't think anybody's going to be complaining about what Hugh did with the
Browns. Hugh Revenge Tour. It would be, you know, I mean, see, that's the interesting thing about that is, you know, I think eventually it is a tough sell. And you do have, I mean, it'd be one thing to claim Hugh is the victim in both Oakland and Cleveland because of dead roster. And I mean, they basically took everything away from him there. In Cleveland, he was basically not hardly even allowed to speak with Baker Mayfield. And that was apparent. But when the team just takes off as soon as you're gone and the quarterback, who's the most important person that you should have a relationship, hates
you.
Is
just punking you.
Punking you publicly. It's hard to take you
right
seriously. Now, I'm sure that, you know, he just never should have taken that damn Browns job in the first place, because then everybody here would think Hugh taking over was
great,
a savior. He's the savior, right? Everybody loved Hugh in 2015.
I get that there's only 32 of these jobs, and so you gotta go when you can. But what the Todd Haley thing, him bringing in Todd Haley.
Now
that speaks to
who made brought that in hire? Todd Haley. Right. That's kind of the discussion. Well, I don't know if it's that cut and dry that was a Hugh call. I think it was possibly pushed on him a little bit. I can't. If your staff is Todd Haley and Greg Williams, you've got a death wish.
Both of these things are true. If they hired Hugh, the next 7 months will suck. Okay, the Twitter.
All that stuff,
it'll be negative. There's no question, right? The overall feeling.
There's a weird corner of the fan base that is okay with you that we don't hear as much. It's weird. Like, I do see this surface where a higher percentage of people than you would think seem to be.
Well,
I hear that are like, Hugh will be great, and I don't know. It's just
I just feel the next 6-7 months will not be positive.
It'll be same old Bengals. It'll be
right.
It'd be like if they kept Marvin.
But that doesn't have anything to do with how they'll do in the season.
Right.
So I think the Hugh really brings out the nuance. I mean, you got to use your nuance with Hugh, because it's not you like that?
Hashtag nuance.
That's right. It's not just right or left here. Yeah. It's gonna be murky.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
I wouldn't do it, but I ain't the one doing it.
I would not do it. I would just say this. I understand more why they would do it than I think most people do. I do think that players do respond to him, I don't care what you want to say about everything happened in Cleveland, and we just discussed why it's hard to believe that wasn't partially on him, and he tends to not blame much on himself. We know that about Hugh. That was an effed up situation.
Yeah, totally.
He had no talent. They were purposely tanking on him. The whole Sashi thing when he was there. This year, you know, he wasn't allowed to do anything offensively. Todd Haley started Josh Gordon when he was told not to in the opener. I mean, Todd Haley wasn't listening to a word that Hugh said. Now, that's on Hugh. I mean, you're in charge of your offensive coordinator, but clearly he had been stripped of that by somebody or was used as a fall guy, and all that's fine. I think there is something to feeling like I would be curious to see how he would look doing this job, and I do think people nationally have really piled on to Hugh. They have just totally blamed him for everything that happened in Cleveland, and he deserves a ton of responsibility for it. But the stuff going on in that organization is such a clown show, and it has been forever. They're lucky that things are coming together.
Because
John Dorsey has straightened it out.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
that's what we do as a society, though. We are very definitive.
Yeah.
We're snap judgment, then we're on to the next. It's like, oh, you suck. Baker's awesome. Everything's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're on to the, you know, judging the next thing, whether it be kickers that miss, you know, whatever. We're just what we do.
You're touching on society as
a
whole?
I'm deep
here.
Wow. We write it in stone.
We are deep. Yeah, you're right. And it's Hugh must be awful. Whereas 2 years ago, this guy was viewed as, God, get rid of Marvin and promote Hugh. Why could you? How could you let Hugh go? Right? That was, everyone was screaming that. I can go back and read. I need a stenographer to go back and read the comments from 2015.
Well, I'm trying to think on the hierarchy of where you want to be with these coachings. You want to be a consultant. That's the best. And then you want to be, you don't even got to be a successful coordinator.
Yeah.
Just a middling to successful coordinator. And then you're in a position of power.
Yeah. You're right. So it's just, the Hugh thing will be interesting. It's very real. So don't think that it's not.
It sounds like you're just preparing people.
Well, I've been preparing people since the beginning. When we did the roundtable, mm-hmm. what did we all say? Marv's gone. Will it be Hugh? I believe it was a 3-2 vote. It's a very real chance. I don't want people to be discounting it, think that they wouldn't do that. I think there's a real chance and a real thought that is what's going to happen. It's possible, for sure. If they're not wowed by anybody, somebody's got to wow them for them to open up and let go of some of the familiarity comfort. Maybe somebody will. Maybe it'll be Eberflus. Maybe it will. But somebody's got to. All right, let's run through some of these other topics that we wanted to get to. I think we've gone through a bunch of stuff here. Team silence, I get asked about a couple of times. So a lot of these teams are making announcements when they have completed an interview with somebody. You know, the Jets have completed an interview with Todd Monken. And I
like the transparency.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Just put it out there, and then
Then other teams are not doing that. The Bengals
and I'm okay with not doing it.
The Bengals have gone silent. I don't really think it makes. It's just teams choose to handle certain things differently. You know, if you know that you completed it's all going to get out there. It's just a matter of where it comes from. I tend to think it's just easier to avoid misreporting.
Yeah,
to just put it out there yourself so that you don't get somebody come in and saying something that's false and people think you did a thing what you didn't do and perception gets wonky.
Or even just something as stupid as you're interviewing them Friday when it's Thursday.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know.
But just general confusion over.
Or if then the interview didn't happen on Friday, but it was actually Saturday. And then people go, why didn't this interview happen? Something happened here? And it's like, no, it was actually Saturday.
But then you interviewed a guy and he drops out and it becomes a little more public.
Right.
That's what happened. And then what do you do with college coaches or trying? There's a lot of weird stuff in there. So I have no problem with them going silent. The Bengals choose to just kind of go silent on all of this. They've really gone on lockdown on all the stuff. So that's fine. But that's kind of why people ask. I mean, different teams handle it different ways. They view pros mm-hmm. and cons, and you can kind of go either way on that. But I do get asked that a lot. Okay. Quickly. On Marvin, you wrote about him this week and what his next stop is. What's kind of your take on that situation?
After this podcast, I think consulting.
No, I think we've figured it out.
Well, I think that I don't want to be dismissive of what he did as a defensive coordinator for the last 7 weeks. I talked to Nick Vigil about it after he was let go, and Nick said, you know, he felt like that lit a fire under him a little bit. And I think, you know, and Marvin even said, if the situation was right, I'd like to get back into coaching. I bet he'd love to get somewhere in Arizona.
Yeah.
So it's
too bad Hilton Head doesn't have a team. It'd be helpful in one of the places where his mansion's
at. Right. But just the same way that we're talking about Kubiak, I think that maybe a year from now, maybe Marvin becomes a kind of a figure where great defensive coordinator, a lot of experience, a lot of different realms. Maybe he becomes an advantageous figure for maybe a team to bring in as that.
Maybe he's Wade Phillips.
He could be the next Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips wasn't Wade Phillips. Until his recent run, where everyone's, oh, a defensive guru, right? But he was wasn't a good head coach, and it sort of sullied his reputation a little bit. And then he sort of has reinvented himself in recent years as a great defensive coordinator. And doesn't need to be a head coach. And will Marvin be that? I don't know.
Well,
I'm just saying. I mean, yeah. There's examples of that all all across the league of guys that sort of reinvent themselves, whether as coordinators or whatever. I mean, Dick LeBeau was a terrible head coach, and he became a defensive coordinator.
Well, and that, that's what I use in my story, was that the last time that this happened to a Bengals coach, he went on to a successful, you know, decades-long run with the Steelers, won two Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator, and sort of kind of cemented his legacy in terms of as a coach. But I tell you what I can't wait for is as I'm preparing to get married next January, I fully anticipate reports from the Nationals that Marvin will be in the woods contemplating a defensive coordinator position with the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, why not? Yeah, I mean, I expect him to keep coaching. I agree with you. I feel like considering he was here for 16 years and all that he went through, it feels like time to take a little time off.
Yeah.
But, you know, Who knows? You never know. You never know. I mean, I'm sure teams have contacted him about differing roles. Yeah. He still has a whole lot of resources. He could still bring a heck of a staff with him because he's so well connected, and all of that stuff. So I mean, it's not like there's not a future for him. I think, you know, he said he wanted to keep coaching. I anticipate he will at some point, whether it's this year. It's probably better for him to just take some time.
But I joke about the consulting thing, but I'm serious about how versatile it is because there's so many avenues you can go. Like Chuck Pagano is in consulting right now with NFL officiating. So that's a whole nother realm. But
and Pagano interviewing for head coaching jobs a year later. And he was, I mean, let's just say I'd have taken Marvin's career as a head coach over Chuck Pagano's career as a head coach.
Right.
Big time.
But these guys coach is what they do. How old is Romeo Crennel? That guy's like 70. He's in his 70s.
Still DCing after bad runs.
He's still going over the chart on the sideline over there, just intense as ever.
So absolutely.
I think we'll see Marv again.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's play AFC North reality show.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to carry me here. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't watch a lot of reality television.
Yeah, but you know some of the shows
You got me back.
Or we could just do what channel would it be on?
We could do that. You got me back into Survivor, so
I did. We could do. By the way, new season starts in February. Way more people, expanded number of people that want to be in the Survivor pool.
Which I was co-champion of.
You were a co-champion of. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel like I'm just getting my life back now, and now it's going to start back up again.
I know. That's what happens. Edge of extinction. I'm not sure what that means, but we'll get to that. We'll probably wait for a non-coaching search episode to really dive into the Survivor 38th season.
I'm trying to Google over here to get ahead of this segment, and I just typed in reality shoes into Google.
That's problematic.
So that's what coaching searches will do to you.
Okay, so let's start with Cleveland. Do you have something for Cleveland?
I think it's like, it needs to be something sexy. What's that show, like Vanderpump Rules? I'm trying really hard here.
Cleveland. It's got to be a show that was a joke and now is suddenly like all of a sudden hot again.
Okay, right? I like that angle better.
So maybe it's Survivor, because in my opinion, although some will say it never went away, but it has never been better. Even though it was kind of spent a long time where people were like, you watch Survivor, but then people now watch and they're like, wow, this is actually,
I can't stop.
When you really
this.
Watch, when you really look at it, this might be one of the best shows on television.
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
I know
too.
People hate me right now. This is terrible.
Maybe the Browns does this to people, but Survivor makes you actually sit here and go, how would I do this?
Yes.
Or how could I perform in this?
Yeah, and it's so mental. The game is so deep, and it's like, man, did they just kind of like, did I just miss this whole thing about how it set itself up, and they were thinking about the long haul the whole time,
right?
They're set up.
If you were a college quarterback looking at the Browns, you're like, how would I do in this?
Yes.
Could I go in here and win this game? Yes. Baker Mayfield has so far.
Very interesting. Pittsburgh has to be some sort of Desperate Housewives or something that's like, whether Atlanta or Orange County, I don't care which one it is.
Okay.
Maybe if you did a Desperate House, like if you did the Real Housewives of whatever, of all of them, and you combine them into like an all-star cast.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Pittsburgh would be.
Yeah, certainly.
Total train wreck. You knew it was going to be a total train wreck, and now it's all blowing up in your face. You never should have put this show together.
Right.
this is a terrible idea to try to be the all-star cast of Real Housewives.
I'm going to need a Photoshop with Big Ben involved, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Mike Tomlin, all those characters. That'd be a good promo for a reality show.
Yeah. It probably exists. Yeah, it is the internet after all. A
lot
of
drama.
Baltimore. So we've got interesting. Baltimore's interesting. Which, by the way, as far as the Steelers go, we kind of focused on the Housewives part. But, I mean, Antonio Brown, I don't think is going to be there anymore. So now they're going to be without. There's a pretty good chance. Can you believe? I got a take.
Hot take,
possibly spelled incorrectly. So you got to tell me. So people were mad that they were mad at Peter King for taking Antonio Brown off his All-Pro ballot, right?
I got to take off your take.
If Antonio Brown had gone out in the biggest game of the year for the Steelers and caught 15 passes for 232 yards and 3 touchdowns, and the Browns had beaten the Ravens, and it basically willed them into the postseason, if he had done that, would that have affected your opinion of him as an All-Pro in where he stands amongst that group of receivers? Would that have affected that? You can answer it honestly. You know the answer. Of course it would.
I mean, of course it would have.
So when he does the opposite of that, by quitting on his team the week of the biggest game of the season, would that not affect your opinion of him amongst the other receivers?
Yeah.
Of course it would. So why is that a crazy thing that his opinion of where he ranks amongst receivers for this season would change when you quit on your team the biggest week of the season?
Yeah, I get that. But Peter said he's not in his top 20 wide receivers in the league. The guy just caught 104 passes.
That was not my discussion.
Okay. But he had 1,300 receiving yards and 15 touchdowns.
Not my part of this discussion. I don't know about top 20. I'm not getting into that. Yeah. I'm talking about not making the All-Pro team because that was why he said he took him out.
Hey,
that affects your view. How could that not affect your view of what kind of season he had? Oh, had a great season, quit on his team in the biggest week of the year.
Right. And it's a subjective thing.
If I were starting a team, he wouldn't be in my top 20. If I were starting a team, because I don't want that in my locker room. I want AJ Green. I don't want Antonio Brown.
Do you vote for All-Pro team? Do you have a vote? Okay.
Yes. The PF, the Pro Football Writers Association.
Okay, so
that's AP.
It's different.
That's Associated Press. We're Pro Football Writers.
These votes are subjective, and you can do it however you want to do it. It's kind of like the Baseball Hall of Fame. The way you just said it, I'm down with. But I don't want to wade into the – because if you look, the guy is a freak. I mean, his stats are incredible.
Yep.
But, yeah, if you want to put that on into your criteria, sure, leave him off.
Yeah. Baltimore
is boring, but it's steady. It's always around where it was at.
And now it's changing because Harbaugh is not solid to definitely be back. He says he wants to be back and all that stuff, but they've tried this extension negotiation. It didn't work. They've got Lamar. They got this whole Flacco thing. It looks like Lamar's going to be the future there, but then you saw some of the problems with that on Sunday where – played the Chargers for the second time. They knew what to expect on the handle, and he couldn't throw. At least could not complete enough passes to have them move the ball effectively for 3.5 quarters. And now there's development that can happen there, certainly. And they showed they could win a lot of games down the stretch, and like people didn't know what they were getting themselves into.
I think Harbaugh not going to Flacco and riding with Lamar, I think, is an indicator that I think he feels secure, and I think he'll be back. Nah, maybe I'm reading too much into just one decision in a game.
Yeah, maybe.
And, I mean, Lamar did bring him back.
Lamar should be the guy. He should be given a chance to be the guy. I think he proved enough, even though the playoff did not go his way. I mean, he still was a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of people believe him. Ravens fans were crazy booing in that game.
I told you, we as a society, we're too definitive.
They spent years booing Joe Flacco and dying for them to put Lamar in. And the second in a playoff game when Lamar is struggling,
they're
screaming for Flacco and booing. And then I was dying for Lamar to actually bring them back just to make Ravens fans feel bad about themselves.
And he almost did.
Damn near did.
Well, okay, so What reality show are we looking for?
I don't know. I don't know what the Ravens would be. I'd have to really think about that one. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. It's maybe like The Price is right after Bob Barker left. It's like, wow, the show, it's the same but different. I still like it. I still think there's a lot of good things happening here. Still think it's quality. I still want it at 11 a.m.
So is Drew Carey...
Drew Carey is Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson is Drew Carey. Okay.
So we've established that. Give me two things you learned from this weekend real quick.
I am here for mascots being positioned under the field goal post. That's number one always.
Oh, my God. When are teams going to stop putting their mascots right behind the field goal posts? All it does is create memes. Dude, Houday? Remember Houday?
Yes, I watched Houday way too much this season just to see what his reaction would be.
Oh, God. By the way, in our end-of-year awards, if you get a chance to go check those out, I did go. I had to check, speaking of mascots under the goalposts, in half of the Bengals' road games this year, a team kicked a 50-plus yard field goal in the final 10 seconds of the second quarter. Think about that. Not just any field goal, because there's more other field goals that were kicked in the final 10 right. seconds. 50-plus yards in the final 10 seconds on the road. Just, demoralizing play right before halftime. Half of the road games. Hysterical. That's a lot of mascots under the field goal posts being happy.
Okay, that was my funny one. My serious one is I remember that Rams-Chiefs regular season game. Everybody thought maybe this was the future and the changing of the guard in the NFL and all this offensive stuff. And I watched a slate of playoff games that reminded me that it's all about that defense and running the ball. It always comes back to that.
Almost every team out there this weekend was a kind of some version of defense and run the ball. Almost every single team. Now, is it telling that the teams that were sitting at home waiting to play next weekend are
that's
not
true.
That?
That's true.
We'll find. That's what's going to be interesting. So Colts, who've become, luckily they have Andrew Luck who threw 39 touchdown passes, but they give Marlon Mack a ton of run. They run the ball a lot. They've got the good defense. Them against Kansas City will be a very good litmus test. And, you get into, the Eagles. Obviously, Nick Foles. I would have liked to have seen the Bears playing against one of these high-octane offenses. I would have liked to have seen that because, that's going to be interesting. Next weekend is going to be a really interesting look at, the best of the defense and run versus the new high-octane offensive NFL. Which NFL are we in?
Dude, I am here for this Jack Morris, John Smoltz pitchers duel. I love
you want defense.
I love it.
You want something that looks like Chargers and Ravens?
I love games like that. I'm here for the high flying aerial assault. I like that too, but I like watching some defense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I will take. I feel more like I'm watching football at 16:15 than I do at 54:51. And having to, every point matters.
I want them to
every
earn
touchdown
it.
Is a huge
earn
deal.
It.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I want to appreciate those points.
I one thing I learned from this weekend is that I do still have the capacity to feel empathy for kickers. Dude, Cody Parkey, it's tipped. It hits one upright and then hits the crossbar for your season. I am sick for Cody Parkey, and I'm sick for what his mentions probably look like and whatever else is going on. Apparently, a lot of Eagles fans are Venmoing him money, which is kind of cool. But because he used to be an Eagles kicker. But anyway, so I felt that was just such a disgusting way to have a season end. The way Bears fans, it took me back to 2015, which is funny, the 16-15 score. Because that was the score before Chris Boswell kicked the game winner in the 15 playoffs with the Steelers and Bengals. But it felt similar, where it was just hard to believe what you had just watched.
Don't you get the feeling that if you hit the upright, it should be worth a point? Or if you hit the upright and the crossbar, it should be worth five?
You get a point for every.
Yeah,
I agree. But then you're like doing replays of did it tip the bar? Did it not tip the bar?
I don't tweet at people in those moments. If you're out there listening, you shouldn't do it.
Oh yeah, that'll fix it.
But I was looking at his Instagram here. He has a photo of a light pole. Cody Parkey. He's posted this. He posted this on January 3rd, 2013. Cody Parkey.
2013?
Yeah, where it all began. JCP kicking at a light post.
Oh, no.
Said, yeah, he's pretty good at it. He's really good at hitting this post because he did it last week.
He did it four times in the Lions game.
Four times against, yeah.
How about NBC having the montage of misses ready to go, and they played they played that Guster song. It was just like, oh, my God. Oh, brutal. Just brutal.
Redemption will be yours one day, Parkey. Keep kicking.
Keep kicking. I feel for Bears. I mean, especially the Bears,
yeah,
who haven't had success. They haven't been in the playoffs. This is their team. They're at home. Trubisky's it up, and like he might be the real thing. He makes the drive. He makes the throws. Gets him within to a 43-yard chippy.
It was their breakout.
Tip doink doink.
And it broke.
Yeah, brutal. Just brutal. I feel for Bears fans. I still can feel empathy. That, and I guess the other thing I learned was I'm more Team Eberflus than I've ever been. So there it is. All right, today in Kanye. We can wrap this up today in Kanye. So he's been active. Award show season, isn't this kind of like where you're waiting to see where Kanye's going to pop up, or you think that's over? He's not.
No,
he's
he
too smart.
Awards
for
will not validate him. He validates himself.
No, that's what I mean. Is he would just show up there just doing crazy things, though.
Yeah, but now he doesn't. He just did announce he's not going to headline Coachella. They'd asked him to. He's not going to do that.
No.
But he is currently working on his new album, which is reportedly titled Yandy, in Miami with Lil Wayne, Timbaland, and Migos, as have been seen going into the
All-Star
studio.
Crew. That's an All-Star Crew.
Bring you to a point that I do in my home life with my now fiance is I Migo her a lot.
What does that mean?
Okay, do you listen to Migos?
Just tell your story.
Okay, well they're kind of into that. They'll be rapping and such, and there's a lot of repeating going on. And I notice that I do that to Caitlin all the time. She'll be like, "What do you want for dinner?" And I'll be like, "Dinner," or she'll say, "What are we gonna get at the grocery store?" And I'll be like, "Groceries." So just whatever she says, I'll just sort of
yell it louder.
I'll just yell it louder
in the
or
background.
I'll try to find like a word off of that. You know, like Bengals coaching search, Hugh Jackson. I do that all the time subliminally.
You need to do that more on the podcast.
I think I should.
Anytime I ask you a question, like, you're like, all right, what's your top three? Three, one, two, three.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Swerve. And then just silence.
Hot take.
Oh, all right. I like it. So possible new album coming from Kanye. Well, that's big.
Sure, in 8 months when it drops.
Yeah, that'd be big.
Have everybody all piped up.
Don't Migos people.
No,
Migos
people.
Yeah, Migos. Start Migosing everyone that you meet. All right. Okay, so keep it locked. Coaching search continues. We're on that grind for you. We're out here monitoring and trying to get information every step of the way so you know what's going on. Again, I anticipate another week and some change potentially. Maybe, maybe the end of this week we might have a guy. So maybe the next PVP will be you'll hear the interview with the coach. Otherwise, it could roll into the Senior Bowl, which is coming up right around the corner. Fletcher will be boots on the ground in the Senior Bowl. When Marvin was hired, he actually was basically announced in Mobile, and they didn't have enough polos, Bengals polo, so he had to literally take the PR guy's polo to have a Bengals polo on when he did his official interview done. That was obviously way back in 2003.
You're a bank of institutional knowledge about.
I've been around this.
You got
moment.
It all.
I've been around.
Polo.
Bring the polos. So anyway, so it will. So that we'll see how far this goes, but I think we're halfway home, and we'll see where it lands. Hope this was helpful for everybody. Hope you guys have a better feel for what's going on in the search. And we will have potentially an emergency BBP between now and next Monday. But otherwise, we'll be back bringing it back to you then. So, anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time on the BBP.